happy Tuesday, and thank you for joining another special episode of Your Welcome. I am back from beautiful Bristol, Connecticut, where I got to cover UFC 308 right there from headquarters at ESPN. I want to tell you on today's episode, I want to give you my thoughts and remind you what I felt happened. From Cosmet Chimaev's next fight to where the featherweight title goes from here and so much more, guys. No time to waste. Let's start the show. Let me take you guys down an interesting road. And that road is Fighter of the Year. That is when our industry gets together for the World MMA Awards. That is the big one. Do you guys watch music award shows? Do you watch that? They'll have all sorts of stuff, but the final one of the night is simply called Entertainer of the Year. And whoever wins Entertainer of the Year, that's the big one, right? That's the all-around, to put it into a gymnastics term for you. And when you talk about Fighter of the Year, it sure looked as though that was locked up by a man named Alex Pereira. But that's being greatly called into question now by a man named Ilia Topuria. And who would you give it to? Now, be real careful. Recency bias, boy, that's a real thing. But the attitude of Pereira has taken him a long way. Pereira's stardom and the goodwill that he's got, not just with you, the audience, but even within the organization UFC itself, does come largely from an attitude that he will fight anybody at any time. And should it arise that he doesn't feel good at the time of a fight that he's already said he will do, he will go out and do it anyway. That'll take you a long way. We just don't know that Topuria doesn't have that same thing. He just wasn't put in the position. I'm talking about Topuria. And if you were to talk about great wins, I went back, guys, before I talked to you today. Featherweight. I looked at who's the number eight guy at featherweight. And the comparison I was planning to make for you guys is because that's what Pereira just did. As amazing as he looked, he went and fought the number eight guy in Roundtree. So what would happen if Ilya did that? And wouldn't you know, the number eight guy is Josh Emmett. And we saw them fight. And it was a very brutal and a very dominant contest. And it looked like two guys that should not be that close to each other in the rankings. It looked like there was some discrepancy, which now we know, as Topuria being the best fighter in the world, there was. So if you look at it from that perspective, both of them have two wins. Both of those wins came by way of stoppage. Both of them dealt with very tough guys, and there was some back and forth. But Topuria, to his credit in this, did have the absolute best guys, which, by the way, is really the closing of a chapter. John Anik, I'm gonna take this thought from him, credit to John, who influenced what I'm about to tell you, but John said this right to Daniel Cormier, said, Daniel, let's just use a different weight class, because Topuria wasn't overly well known. I can relate to that. The day I looked him up, my partner Ryan's telling me how to spell his name so I can type it in, because I want to see the real name of Mr. Hand Sanitizer. That wasn't that long ago. And I did not know how to spell Ilya or Topuria, let alone to pronounce them, right? It's one of these things of how far he came and how fast he came there. But so did Pereira. Pereira wasn't well known. Pereira was a little bit older. When he came over into this sport, we thought this is an experiment that we've tested all the way back to 1993 with a striker coming over, and he's not going to go and do all that well. So it was a really big surprise, wasn't it? And he took out some top guys. But John Anik told Daniel Cormier that if Pereira had come in, at the time when John Jones and Daniel had separated themselves from the field, everybody knew the two best guys, and then you have the rest of the field. If Pereira would have come in and back-to-back knocked out John Jones and Daniel Cormier, he effectively would have closed the book. It would have ended. He took out an era. He took out the right guys. He took them out easily. And John Anik was just suggesting for Daniel that you look at Ilya Topuria to have done the exact same thing. Except instead of it being mythically and figurative speaking, stopping Volkanovski and stopping Max ends an entire era of discussion. The chapter is now over. And I think that that is really powerful. There's a massive compliment within that analogy. And there's a massive analysis within that explanation. We have a lot of divisions where we rank these guys, but we all know, standing back, whoever gets the opportunity out of those top 10 names that we put up there, whoever gets the opportunity could win the belt on any given night. At 145, there was a very clear gap. They had fought everybody. Everybody had been given their chance. It had been so long. Some guys even left the division. Some guys are talking about leaving the division. But between Volkanovski and the house that he cleaned and the way he did it, I don't think you guys could even off the top of your head tell me rounds that Volkanovski had lost. I know in Volk's last fight with Max, he did not lose any rounds. I don't think you have a whole lot of rounds that you could tell me that Max lost. Like, these guys had really separated themselves. And that's also what Daniel and John had done. And had Piera come in and got them, it would have ended the era. But that's not what's happening with Topuria. We are not ending an era. He does not have these guys in his rear view. He does not get to talk about Fighter of the Year and how exciting this was. And when he closed the book and then these guys, and they've got to climb back. And how are they going to do that? Are they going to face each other? Max has already solved this problem. I don't know if you guys heard this. Max is not going back to 145 pounds. That is official. Max has left the division. Did you guys know that? I might have just broke news for you. Volk, on the other hand, who looked great at 55, who was wildly competitive at 155, is coming to 145 and has been told that he, in fact, is going to get the title shot. He was told this before this fight even happened. We believe him, of course. Not only does Volk always tell us the truth, but he was sitting cage side so he could jump in the ring and do a face-off. And by the way, that wasn't guaranteed to be against Ilya Topuria. That could have been against Max. I don't know what your guys' appetite is to see Volk and Topuria again, but I have a pretty good idea what your appetite is to see Volk versus Max again. And I think if you were to juxtapose that comparison against somebody new like Diego Lopez, you would quickly jump on Diego Lopez. But my entire premise to you that Topuria has shut the book on that era is not true if he is given Volk next. It's also not true if you believe he should be given Volk next. And then you got to think about one step further, guys. What if Volk beats him? What if Volk wins? What do we do then? At least we won't have to revisit the idea of Volk versus Max for the thousandth time because Max has maturely and responsibly taken himself out of the division. But what happens then? You just run him back against Topuria? In an effort to rebuild what once was an undefeated start, to build him back to stardom, you give him that match again? And it's just one of these strange spots where we would be chasing our tail immensely, or we just don't book the fight, which isn't to say that Volk can't work himself back into it. But it was one of the high spots of the entire evening when Volkanovski went in there. He was not called for it. Somehow Volk got access to the stairs. Did you guys see this shot, this camera shot? So there's there's Ilya Topuria, and he's having his moment. His family's there, and they all look beautiful. And then there's Volkanovski at the stairs. So they ask him, they tee it up for this organic moment. And they ask Topuria between Lopez and Volk, who clearly one of them are next, which one is it? And Topuria starts working. He says, I want to fight them both, to be honest. And he looks over and he sees that Volk is there. And Topuria wasn't trying to create controversy. He was just the opposite. He was trying to celebrate and have a relief from controversy. And Volk comes up. And I believe that and that alone is going to get Volk the title shot. Had Diego Lopez understood what was happening or what time it was, or had somebody with him that could speak English and tell him, get up there. Get up there and get in front of Volk. Don't give him this camera shot because it can't be run wound. And I won't be a hater on that fight. When that gets booked and announced, I won't even tell you that Volk doesn't have a shot. That's not my message now. But we do have to face with, well, what do we do with Lopez? And do we want to take those kinds of risks? If that's the guy that's supposed to be in there anyway. What is next for Chimaev? And I feel that that's a bigger question and a bigger talking point even than what happened, right? I mean, we knew going into this, he had a 50% chance of winning that fight. It was either going to be Chimaev or Whitaker, but there wasn't a lot of talk of this being a number one contenders match in regard that whoever wins goes next with Dricus. It was always, to my understanding, a number one contenders match in that whoever wins gets to wait for the outcome of Strickland and Dricus. It had always been that way. And when the performance was done, it really was a wow moment. Robert Whittaker has never had his ass kicked on the ground in the whole career, including 170 pounds and the tournament known as Ultimate Fighter. It's never happened. Robert Whittaker, as a matter of fact, has only had his ass kicked twice in his life. Once by Dricus, which was a big surprise of how good Dricus was, which I think is one of the motivations that Robert Whittaker wants to get back in there with him. I think he feels, hey, that wasn't the best meet. I agree with that. And the first time that Robert Whittaker fought Israel Adesanya, where Izzy was just too quick. The angles were just too much. And yes, I am quoting Robert Whittaker. So we did have this amazing moment. And we saw it was like the world's fastest tap. Dana gets a picture of it, sends that to Daniel while Daniel is still on the air. Daniel shows that photo to the audience, which we heard from the announce team was a dislocated jaw, but that's not what it was. It was the actual teeth. The actual teeth had so much pressure that they got displaced. Looked brutal, looked very painful. Looked like somebody would have every right, without any kind of embarrassment, to having to tap out and surrender in that moment. But because we got all these things that we just didn't think we were going to have, because the only negative talk on Chimaev that you have ever heard is a question on his conditioning for championship rounds, should he get there? So when all of this stuff gets erased, now we've got a narrative of is Chimaev next, meaning not as his next fight for a title, thus wait, that the next time the title's contested, Chimaev should be one half of that, thus bumping Sean Strickland out. Not on my watch. Not on my watch. Are we going to take that from Sean? Now, Dricus had comment on this. And Dricus was rather polite. He said, I felt bad for Rob Whittaker. And you have that camaraderie, right? Even if Whittaker's coming after him, wants to take his title away, you still have that camaraderie after you fought somebody once. So I took this as very sincere. And I like that Dricus said that. I felt bad for Robert Whittaker. Chimaev sure looked great. And looks like a top contender. But right there, within that statement, Dricus in no way mentioned Sean or doing that fight immediately and removing Sean. So I went to Strickland and I asked Strickland, would you give me something that you won't give anybody else? You'd make me look good over here on my YouTube channel. What you tell me, I am going to repeat. If you're not into that, just ignore this whole thing. No, he did write me back. This is Sean Strickland speaking. He said, I am next in line. It has been said, it has been written. Now, that's an exact quote. I wish he would have just gone a little bit more with it's been written, meaning does he have a contract? Doesn't say the word contract, but it has been written. After I beat Dricus, then Chimaev can step up. And to the point of Chimaev as a contender, I welcome that after I compete with Dricus. The man, meaning Chimaev, who scammed his fans, became best friends with a murderer, and had to flee his homeland when the leash got too tight. That guy can sit down and wait his turn. Coming from Sean Strickland. All right. Now, I think at a minimum, guys, and I do believe we're going to do this exactly as we've intended. I believe if any of those names I just mentioned, Dricus, Strickland, Chimaev, is to do another fight aside from the title fight, the most likely is Chimaev. And I don't think he's likely to do it. I think he's likely to wait. But I can't imagine a scenario where Chimaev gets that nod and then Sean has to go fight somebody else. It appears that we have two incredible number one contenders. One has the ranking, oh, and by the way, is completely undefeated, and his last two wins were both over world champions. Talking about Chimaev getting the jump on Kamara. getting the jump on Whitaker. The other is a former world champion who lost the very belt we're talking about in a very controversial manner. One judge didn't think he lost the fight at all, hence the split decision, but a majority of you also thought that Sean had won that fight. So it sounds like we have the right three guys, and it sounds like now we just have a little bit of a waiting process. Does anybody disagree with that strongly? And I know recency bias, and I know how exciting that is, and I know what Chimaev have done, and wow, but we never did get to address the big issue going into this. The big issue that you guys had, I read all of your comments. Chimaev, my own partners at DraftKings had Chimaev as a 2-1 favorite on this, but so many of you were taking Whitaker. And the big question was, can Chimaev hold up and be a threat in championship rounds? But we really didn't get an answer to that, did we? And we might not. If a guy is too good, we can't hold that against him. If guys can't stay in there to be there that long, Chimaev trained for it. He signed the contract to do it. I'm talking about 5 rounds. And he didn't hold any of his energy back. And that was the most impressive thing. Because why you thought, while watching the Kamaru Usman fight, that Chimaev got tired. Why you thought rounds 4 and 5 would be difficult for him. It's not as though he didn't also think that. It's not as though he did not also wonder, can I take this amount of energy I have and can I stretch it for 2 more rounds if I need to? In fact, Chimaev specifically talked to Daniel Cormier privately about this and said, I'm not doing any of those things. I'm aware I'll get exhausted. I'm aware I was exhausted with Kamaru Usman. I'm bringing all my energy right now. I'm going to smash these guys, DC. And then he went out and did that. He did not hold back. An athlete who is not afraid of getting tired, acknowledges that he will, doesn't love that exhausted feeling and state that he's in, but he's not afraid of it. He'll go there anyway. Fedor fit that bill. Fedor loved being exhausted. Dan Gable fits that bill, and I had to go all the way back to 1972. I can't think of a third athlete. But based on what we're seeing from Chimaev and what he's saying, I mean, I'll just remind you, an athlete that is not afraid to get exhausted, oh, by the way, can continue focused on his path while being exhausted, goes on to be a champion. So I do not argue with anybody that say Chimaev's next fight should be for a title. And I don't think we're in the point where we're going to remove Sean and even need to have this discussion. But should we get to that point, that would be wrong. Dricus versus Strickland as planned. Winner versus Chimaev as planned. It's official. We are in fall. Guys, it is the busiest and best time of the year for team sports and sports fans. Look, you got the NFL. You got college football. You got NHL and MLB postseason. Don't be left out of the season by trying to run your e-commerce business all on your own. Let me introduce you to the perfect teammate, Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret that with Shop Pay, you can boost conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts are going abandoned and you're going to get more sales. Businesses that sell more simply sell on Shopify. We use Shopify over here at Bad Guy Inc. All of our merchandise, and it will not disappoint you. I want you to upgrade your business. I want you to sign up for a $1 per month trial period at Shopify.com/Chael. That's Shopify.com/Chael, all lowercase. Go to Shopify.com/Chael to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/Chael. It's official. We are in fall. Guys, it is the busiest and best time of the year for team sports and sports fans. Look, you got the NFL. You got college football. You got NHL and MLB postseason. Don't be left out of the season by trying to run your e-commerce business all on your own. Let me introduce you to the perfect teammate, Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret that with Shop Pay, you can boost conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts are going abandoned and you're going to get more sales. Businesses that sell more simply sell on Shopify. We use Shopify over here at Bad Guy Inc. All of our merchandise, and it will not disappoint you. I want you to upgrade your business. I want you to sign up for a $1 per month trial period at Shopify.com/Chael. That's Shopify.com/Chael, all lowercase. Go to Shopify.com/Chael to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/Chael.
You earned a degree in the behavioral health field because you wanted to make a difference. And you're needed now more than ever. Through the new Great Minds Fellowship Program, recent Ohio graduates may be able to receive as much as $20,000 in student loan support when working full-time at a community behavioral health center. Apply before November 15th. To learn more about program eligibility, visit highered.ohio.gov. That's highered.ohio.gov.
Uncle Iv, boy, that's a handful. Uncle Iv is a handful. There's a lot on this. First off, I would like him to get his due. There was a narrative prior to the fight, and hey, Uncle Iv, done everything right. You got a great ranking. This is a very difficult opponent. This is a number one contenders match, but you got to look good doing it as a caveat. Now, that's extremely consistent with everything we've ever heard over at the UFC, right? Show fans come first. I get it. Uncle Iv's way of doing that was to put himself at risk and stand up the entire time. Now, I have pled with you guys, as you guys are saying that Uncle Iv should be the rightful favorite, as my partners DraftKings have him listed over Pereira himself because he's a Dagestani wrestler, and that Dagestani wrestling is the hardest thing for a kickboxer like Pereira to deal with. And I've pled with you, letting you know, no, he's not. He's not a wrestler, not according to him. I understand that he can wrestle. I understand that he wrestles a lot, and I understand he's very good at it. But he's not a wrestler. If you went and asked the guy, what are you representing? What sport? Much like Khabib would say Sambo, Uncle Iv says kickboxing. That's what he prefers. That's who he ties himself to, and he would like to represent in MMA. And you saw that in his fight with Rakic. There was no wrestling. Not a matter of the wrestling failed or it nullified itself. There was no wrestling. Uncle Iv at no part, and this was part of his process of bringing his best skills, his favorite skills, but also satisfying the, you must be exciting. There has been a narrative in our sport for the longest time that the most exciting fights are the ones where the guys stand up and bang. And I had no problem with Uncle Iv's fight with Rakic, largely because I understand how good Rakic is. I understand the risk that he was taking. Every movement that Rakic and Uncle Iv had, I'm sitting there and I'm juxtaposing, and I watch him with Brendan Fitzgerald, got Dustin Poirier there, and I'm asking them, guys, are you seeing anything? Dean Thomas, are you guys seeing anything that you believe Pereira would have problems with? And that's the great one we got to tie together. Whether he would or not, right? Like, the fight is between those two. We as the audience need to have the imagination. We need to be able to believe that this guy has a skill that this guy can't deal with. It's the art of war. And I think that was not our best version of Uncle Iv. I think that that was a toned down Uncle Iv for the point of attempting to tune himself up. Trying to be more pleasing to watch made him look less threatening. Are you guys with me on that? Because while you were wrong, the narrative out there that Uncle Iv was this great and powerful wrestler that's going to take on a kickboxer, and that story goes back to 1993 and heavily favors the wrestler. While you're accurate about that, you were wrong that he prefers to wrestle. And Uncle Iv did stalk his opponent in Rakic, and he did cut him off. And Rakic is longer, and Rakic will offer hands with a lot of power and legs with a lot of power. And Uncle Iv felt those, but he rolled with it. He took the power off. He managed to fire back. I think that he looked very good. I just think that people miss, including Uncle Iv, I think he misses how much we MMA fans really do like MMA. We don't want to see you laying on the ground doing nothing. That's true, but we don't want to see you on your feet trading shots and parrying and showing techniques. We don't. It's those wow moments. So those are my few thoughts. Uncle Iv deserves a lot of credit. Uncle Iv had so much on his shoulders to not only defeat Rajic, who's a killer, then he was a 3.5, 4-1 at times favorite to do so. So now you don't get any credit if you do it. Now it's expected, is my point, and then he's got to look good. He's got to look good, he's got to be exciting, which is a two-man dance. A hard spot for Uncle Iv. And you saw Uncle Iv smile after this fight. It's one of the first times you've ever seen him smile. That was relief. That was relief of everything that he had to go out there and face. So we put Uncle Iv against Pereira. One guy that will insist we do is Pereira. Pereira hears what you say. Pierre does not love the notion that Uncle Iv on a mythical line at DraftKings is the favorite. Oh, and by the way, the only favorite. DraftKings put Uncle Iv mythically against everybody in the top 10. Pierre is favorite to beat everybody in the top 10 except Uncle Iv. And if Pereira was to stay at 205 pounds and not face Uncle Iv, I'm telling you right now, the guy that's going to have the biggest problem with that is going to be Pereira. Pereira's not going to let it happen. But I'm not willing to tell you it's going to happen because I don't believe Pereira is staying at 205 pounds. I believe Pereira's next fight will be against Tom Aspinall. I have reason for believing it. I even believe it's going to be sooner than you might think. January. But there's a lot of things that have to happen before we get to that point. The talk of Uncle Iv, Pereira, look, Uncle Iv's the right guy. Welcome back, Rakic, would be another thought of mine after that fight. I told you guys all week how good Rakic was. I told you what a threat he was. I told you he can stay in there and go with anybody. Well, he just did with a guy that's basically undefeated and a very clear top-ranked guy. So we had a very good contest. But before we start looking to what's next for Pereira at 205, I'm predicting for you what's next for Pereira is actually at heavyweight. What is next? It is the number one thing that we fans care about. What's next? And we've got such a what's next situation from Saturday that we've tried to answer, and I'm not satisfied with any answer that we've come to. By the way, I mean, let's just go through it right in order. Now, you must understand, I woke up today with what they call the wrong side of the bed. I've woken up on the wrong side of the bed, but I had a great weekend. This was the best UFC of 2024. This was one of the best UFCs of all time. I just don't want to sound, when I say that, because I amount to recency bias. So I'll just do the year. It was the absolute best UFC. But as far as the storylines go, I don't feel that we have resolved a damn thing. Let's start at 205 pounds. Which was designed to find an opponent for Pereira. And you want to know something, the part of the story you weren't told? That would have been a hell of a lot easier to do had Rajic won. The entire time, that would have been much easier to do if Rajic won. It was never discussed. It wasn't built into the story. It was a number one contendership for Uncle Iv and a caveat that Uncle Iv's got to look good. You want to know what would have solved everything? If Rajic would have won, he would be the number one contender off to 205. He and Pereira have a little back and forth right now. But I'm not convinced on Uncle Iv. I am convinced on how great Uncle Iv is. I am convinced he might be the best 205-pounder in the world. I am convinced that his ranking of number one is correct, and I'm convinced that his contendership and he's darn near an undefeated fighter. Oh, yeah. I love all of those things. I am not convinced that there was an offering, and not of excitement. I'm not convinced that there was an offering that Uncle Iv may possess a weapon that Pereira can't deal with. And that was what was truly needed. Not just a fun fight. It was truly needed that as I watch you and I imagine that you're in there with Pereira, do you have a tool or a skill that I can then also imagine is going to overwhelm Pereira? Now, I get that that's the fight, guys. I do it, 205 pounds. I get that for the simple reason of there's no one else to go to. Like, no one's that good of a storyteller to tell you a story of how all of these guys are healthy and the champion's not fighting number one. This is a very pro-Uncle Iv piece. I believe Uncle Iv's next fight will be and should be for a world championship. I'm not convinced Pereira's going to be there. I'm not convinced that when Uncle Liev fights next for a title, it's not either going to be a vacated 205-pound belt or an interim belt, because I think that Piera is moving on. I strongly think that Piera versus Aspinall is going to be Piera's next fight. But even if we look at those two, those are our two options. We got Uncle Liev that'll fight Piera, and Piera fight Uncle Liev. Wants to, in fact. But you got Aspinall that'll fight Piera. Piera fight Aspinall, in fact, wants to. So now you got these two choices. I think you see which one looks to be a little bit clearer. No, stand by on that. That's Chael's theory, but I have a reason that I'm setting that down repeatedly. I'll leave it at that. The only person that'll understand what I just told you is Jesse on Fire. The rest of you, go to Jesse and ask him. Now, let's take a look at Chimaev. Does Chimaev become a number one contender? I would sure think so. But before you tell me and try to stick it in my ear that yes, he absolutely did, and you heard this and you know because somebody told you, I'm just going to remind you to October of last year in a place known as Fight Island. In a number one contendership match between Chimaev and a former world champion named Kamaru Usman. Because Chimaev won that. And he was named the number one contender that night. In fact, he was even offered the fight opposite Sean Strickland. Regardless of how your memory might tell you, Chimaev was actually offered that fight in Vancouver, Canada. And we don't know if it was a matter that Chimaev couldn't catch a plane there. We don't know that. We never got that far. Turned out Chimaev, in the course of the Usman fight, had broken his hand and he couldn't make the date. So, we don't know for sure that Chimaev's next. And if he is, what does that mean? Because that can mean two things. And we're very seldomly confronted with this. Hey, you won. Your next fight is for a world championship. Okay, great. But your ears, again, you might be hearing it wrong. That doesn't mean the next time a world championship is fought for at your weight class that you're involved. It just means the next time you fight, it will be for a world championship. And you only get there when you got really good problems. There are really good problems when there are multiple guys and the audience starts bickering back and forth about who should be given the opportunity. As annoying as you might find that, that's when the sport's at its healthiest. That's when a division's at its healthiest. That's when your time as a fan is the most pleasurable. I do not think there is a scenario where they take that shot from Sean Strickland, who won five rounds against Paulo Costa, which is a scary opponent. What Chimaev went out and did to Whitaker, surprising and scary, and it's the same words, but who went first and who was given the promise? Like, Chimaev's next fight could be for a championship against the winner of Drickus and Strickland. But I think that that's the way that we go. But, again, my entire problem with telling you, we got all these storylines, we got all these things we're going to wrap up, they're going to leapfrog us, so we've got a little clearer vision into tomorrow. It's not a little bit clearer. In fact, it's relatively quite unclear. And I think that we need to change that. I think we need to make that real clear. Strickland versus Du Plessis. Chimaev, obvious backup position. Chimaev, you going to do anything between now and then? That's up to y'all. But I wouldn't rule out that he's not. I mean, Chimaev was named the number one contender after the Usman fight, and he did something between now and then. So, let's see how that all unfolds. You then go and look at 145 pounds. And this is the one. This is bad business by me. It's bad politics. Don't jump in a fight if you can't win. I can't win this fight, and I'm jumping in it anyway. Okay? It's going to be Volkanovski for multiple reasons. He says he was told. To support the notion that he was told in a conversation that we did it here, he's in the front row, they've done a cameo, and they brought him in the ring for a face-off with Topuria. You can't put the toothpaste back in that tube, all right? It's going to be Volkanovski, I get that. But when you have Topuria, who rolled into town and closed a book on everything that we thought was real, he shut the book on the 145-pound division, put them both behind him. When you do that, to bring Volk in is not appropriate. You're forcing an era and you're forcing nostalgia when we've got to let the story tell itself. And the story is that yesteryear within that division is behind us, but it is not perfectly clear that the new guy is the best guy. It's really not. Topuria and Lopez were both there. Topuria was given his shot, took that crown, and he took it walking away, but Lopez has taken every contender and he smoked them, sending them out the back door. Like, it's really not clear as you might think. Topuria is better than we knew, but is he the best in the world? Well, he's got to fight his guys, and that's where Lopez comes in. I don't love the idea of waiting on that. I don't understand the idea of waiting on that. And much like with Chimaev, are you going to give him something to do in between, or can he just wait? You have that same thing with Lopez. I understand it's going to go to Volk without illness or injury. I do get we just can't unfry that egg, but what do you want to do? You want to also give Lopez something to do? He's a prize fighter. Gets no prize if he's not fighting. You want to have him wait? Is that a reward? Is that a reward to wait? Is that a good thing to wait? I've never wanted to wait. Has anybody ever wanted to wait? Like, it almost feels like a punishment. Your reward is a punishment. And that's the part of the storylines that get a little bit frayed for me. And as wonderful as the UFC it was, in the three ways that I just described for you, it created more problems than it solved. All right, everybody, that's it for today's episode. Thank you for listening. And a shout out to Todd, who left a comment on Spotify. Nobody in combat sports has a better perspective on how a fight is won before the fighters ever even enter the cage. Thank you, Chael, the godfather of head games. Thank you, Todd. I appreciate it. I'm going to be back for more on Friday. Until then, I'm Chael Sonnen. And you are welcome.
It's simple math. Tim Horton's 2-3-4 menu fills your mornings without emptying your pockets. $2 gets you a hot coffee or a classic bagel. $3, try a sausage and cheese English muffin or two classic donuts. And for $4, enjoy an egg and cheese croissant or an iced cap. Do the math. It all adds up to delicious deals. Only at Tim's. The Tim's 2-3-4 menu is available until 2 p.m. at select Columbus, Ohio restaurants. Terms apply.